You're listening to the Bloomberg Advantage with Corey Johnson and Carol Masser on Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, hooray for Hollywood. And hooray for Jim Miller. James Andrew Miller is the author of a new book entitled Powerhouse, The Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artists Agency. He can be followed on Twitter at Jim Miller, and he joins us here in the studio. Thanks very much for coming in, Jim. First of all, why did you write Powerhouse CAA?
I was really intrigued by the fact that unlike SNL and ESPN, which are two brands that are known throughout the country and indeed at this point throughout the world. These are three initials that really don't have a lot of familiarity outside Hollywood. But yet, at the same time, it has such a big impact and plays such a large role in our culture and even our daily lives, and people don't realize it. So when they go to a Tom Cruise or a Meryl Streep movie, when they turn on the radio and it's Katy Perry, when they go into a Chipotle, when they watch J.J. Watt on the football field, they're Dwayne Wade on the basketball court, and on and on and on, even Jimmy Fallon before they go to bed. All those things are part of the CAA ecosystem, and yet people outside Hollywood really don't know it. And I guess I was also a little fascinated by the fact that they don't really like to talk about themselves and bring any attention on themselves. So the bar was even higher and even more delicious.
So this is a group of five renegade agents who left William Morris Agency in 1975 to launch their own creative agency. And they're behind movies such as Ghostbusters, which I just watched with my eldest son over the weekend. How did they manage to get such a grip?
I think what they did was, look, they were at William Morris. They saw the old way of doing things, and they thought it would be like 20 years before they could actually amass any real power or P.S. wealth. So they decided to strike out on their own. They set up some card tables. They had their wives answering the phones. And what they did was they disrupted. They disrupted the way Hollywood worked. And I'll give you one quick example. In the early 70s, if a studio wanted an actress or an actor to play a part, and it was a William Morris client, they'd send the script over. The agent would then give the script to the actor or the actress. They would say yes or no, and if it was no, the agent would say to the studio, we pass. When they did that with CA, CA said, don't ever say no to the studios. Hold on a second. Maybe if it's for Paul Newman, if he says no, we'll give it to Robert Redford. We'll give it to another agency. And as a result, they started to package things inside the agency. That Ghostbusters movie that you and your son saw, this were practically all CAA clients, all CAA clients. So they actually used knowledge and the control of information and knowledge to improve not only their wealth, but their clients.
Is this legal?
Yeah, sure. Well, just smart.
Well, but how did they get all of these top brand clients?
I think that, you know, one of the things that I try and do in the book is, you know, trace the pedigree of CAA in terms of like what happened with one leading to another and another and another. And, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating was they used to sometimes have so much influence over a project, they would actually do casting out of CA. So can you imagine you're an agent at a different agency and you have an actor or an actress who's going to read for a part, but it's not at the studio. You have to go over to CA because, you know why? Because the director is a CA client and like the male actor is a CA client and the writer is a CA client. So you send your actor's client over there and it's like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, you know, it just wasn't fair.
Jim, in addition to being a prolific author, you were also formerly special assistant and chief speechwriter to then Senate Majority Leader Howard Baker. Is there any commonality between politics and the world of Hollywood entertainment?
Well, I tend to judge those worlds based on ego and paranoia. I would, you know, sometimes I'd like sit on the Senate floor and literally watch members come in and I'd do my own little rankings. It turns out that there's healthy doses of both in both towns. I will say this, though, that Hollywood is very much, I mean, it's kind of like cliche, but Hollywood, cash equals truth. I mean, money is one of the ways in which, you know, you can keep score. In the Senate, the senators were making like $110,000. I mean, you know, some of these people in Hollywood spend that on a plane to go to a vacation. So I think that there's different ways in which they keep score, but I still think you have to have, you have to have a lot of hubris and a lot of faith in yourself to survive in both worlds.
Was there anything when you were writing about CAA that struck you or came as a surprise?
Yes. In fact, it was the culmination of like a lot of thinking about how much the business is changing and how there's fewer movies being made by fewer studios and just the numbers, the big numbers that people used to get in the 80s and 90s were no longer there. And so did some research and figured out that in 2015, for the first time in CAA's 41-year history, CAA Sports made more money than CAA Movies or CAA Television or CAA Music.
Does that tell you that the decisions were not that good about casting, or does it tell you more just about the appetite of viewers?
No, I think it says something about CAA's agility, which is their ability to understand that revenue streams are changing. And so in 2006, they went out and they started CAA Sports. And what they've done is they've come up with a new revenue stream that's very, very viable, and it's offsetting some of the losses they may be seeing in the movie business.
How many people work there now?
About 1,700 worldwide. And we're talking China, Japan, Switzerland, London, Nashville, all over the place.
But Michael Ovitz, no longer there, correct?
Right. The founders were all gone by 1995, and a new generation took place. And that generation is still there, 21 years later.
Jim, you say that, you quote from Sun Tzu in one of your chapters, The Prince of Denmark, and you say, if you wait by the river long enough, the bodies of your enemies will float by. Why did you select that quote?
Well, that chapter, chapter five, is really the key chapter in the book, because that's the era that we were just talking about, when the one generation leaves, the new generation comes in. And you know, for that quote, I think is emblematic of the fact that there were certain people at CAA who, when they had a lot of power, people feared them and people had to play along with them. But when they didn't have power, I think sometimes they rejoiced in the fact that they had fallen so hard and flown too close to the sun.
Interesting. I guess there's no love lost there, right?
It's a tough place. It really, I mean, it sounds like a cliche, right? But it really is. And it manifests itself daily. And if you have a thin skin, you are going to have many sleepless nights.
Thank you very much for joining us. James Andrew Miller, Jim Miller, he is the author of the new book, Powerhouse, The Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artists Agency. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Miller. This is the Bloomberg Advantage. I'm Pim Fox. My co-host, Lisa Abramowitz. And this is Bloomberg.